The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
Welcome to the latest Business of the Business podcast. I'm your co-host, JP John Paz from the Two-Man Power Trip. Of course, joining me is the financial wrestling genius, the doctor himself, Mr. Lovely Marlin. Lovely, how are you doing today, sir?
Hey, John, I'm feeling good, working my way into Thanksgiving. And what else? We're going to go Russo end to end. We're going to start with some Vince Russo news, and we're going to end with some Vince Russo analysis.
Can't believe this. 2025, we're still talking Russo, but he's got new stuff on the horizon. Obviously, we talked about JCW4. He's teamed up with the Clowns and ICP. But what is going on? He's got another new book, Total Nonstop Agony? What is this?
Yeah, so every once in a while, I pop into our friends at ECW Press, their website, to see what books are on the docket that may not have yet been promoted or go through their PR channels, but maybe listed in their wrestling category on the website. And the last couple of times I've done that, there's been a surprise. So looks like an interesting one. I guess you could say a fun one, depending who you are. But Total Nonstop Agony, The Rise and Fall of TNA. This looks pretty interesting. Let me skip through some of the puffery here. Best known for being the most successful writer in history. But this book picks up where Russo's stories, he begins work with the upstart TNA, where the daily dramas proved greater than ever. Indecisive millionaire Southern Belle, Dixie Carter, who cared more about her image than her wrestling company. I'm just reading the book write-up, people. This isn't my opinion. The demise of his friendship with his best friend, wrestling superstar Jeff Jarrett, the network executives at Spike, who understood very little about the business they were in, and return of his mortal enemies, Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan. Russo's TNA stories are epic, and many have never been told before. This seems like a lot of fun, John. Are you going to pick this up?
Yes, I'm very interested in this. And I was talking to him a while ago, and he said, oh, if you think Bischoff hates me now, wait till I release a new book or something. And I didn't know exactly what he meant by this, but obviously this is what he meant by this, because for some reason, he might be wrong on this, he says I'm a Bischoff mark. So he doesn't think that I'm going to like what he's written about Bischoff in this book. So I'm very interested just to see some of this backstage stuff. I mean, some stuff we know, some stuff obviously we don't, and we know that they didn't really get along, but they had to work together again, because obviously what happened at WCW, they worked together again in TNA, so something must have been okay.
Yeah, I think, you know, not to get you in any hot water, John, but in noticing the patterns, Vince Russo, you have on very regularly, but who do you often bring on for your anniversary shows? Eric Bischoff. So Russo wants to feel a little bit more, a little bit more special.
It is funny that he said, I was like, I'm just telling it like it is. I was like, I can't blame him for all the stuff in WCW. You know, he was gone by some of that point, but he was just saying, oh, you're being a Bischoff mark and stuff like that. But I'm interested to see, as far as TNA, like the evolution of that relationship. And then obviously it got worse again after it got better.
Yeah, you know, like I don't know if you're read, John, did you read Jerry Jarrett's first book, which was really like a diary where he just published? That's, I mean, I would consider a fun read. I think you would too. It's very like random, because he's like talking about like reimagining gas stations for his actual business, but then has a lot about TNA. It's basically the first year in the development of what was then called NWA TNA. So before we move on, John, you know, I know you're very busy with podcasting, but if you ever go back into the convention business, that might be a great headliner, you know, you moderating Russo against Bischoff.
Oh, I like that. That's actually a good idea. I'm going to bring that up to both of them. I don't know about if Eric will be in, but Vince hasn't really done any conventions or anything. So it'd be nice to get him out there, maybe sell a few books too.
Yeah, I'm surprised he hasn't done the convention scene. I would think that would be a popular thing.
Not in years. I'd say maybe 5-6 years. I don't think he's been out there doing it for a while, maybe since COVID hit.
We should talk, with Brett Lauderdale, next time he's having a show at the mall. Too late for this weekend, but
yes, true, good point.
That might be an interesting draw there. Maybe brokered by the Insane Clown Posse.
That would be very, very interesting. I'd be intrigued and interested in that too. But as far as some wrestling shows, I know we're kind of saying GCW's coming up, but what about WWE? What about MSG? What about John Cena? What about Lavi going to this show and spending an arm and a leg, but he did it? What was your experience like at MSG for WWE and John Cena's last, really his last Raw, but really his last show at MSG as well?
Yeah, as I've been talking about for weeks, I kind of had this like 3-show run in mind, the UFC on Saturday night, Monday Night Raw, the last John Cena match, and then NXT. And at certain times, I was closer to one than the other. For UFC, the prices were just like ridiculous. The cheapest that I ever saw them was $700. That was sort of, I think it's always been crazy ever since they broke into New York City. So I was just like watching that. I didn't really, I don't watch too much of the modern stuff, so I didn't really know the fighters, but I was just like curious in case Donald Trump showed up. But then I asked my wife, I was like, what about, taking my son to NXT? She's like, probably not on a school night. not a good idea. So I'm glad this was ultimately the choice that John Cena's last match. So in comparison, the tickets didn't seem as crazy. And John, have you ever sat up in the bridge section of Madison Square Garden?
For a concert, yes. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Kind of a little, what's the word for it? Not like fearful, but a little bit like whoa, what I mean? Like I'm all the way up here, almost like feels like you're suspended in midair there. But it's cool.
Yeah, 100%. I have a little bit of fear of heights or vertigo, yes, or whatever. Like nothing extreme, but like I was just like, what? I wasn't sure exactly like what it even was, but I think it's a great idea because like the 300s at the Garden, if you're not in the front row, especially like it starts slanting back and of course, tiered seating. So, like, you feel really far away in the back of the 300. But here, like, you're basically in the same real estate. You're just being suspended on a bridge, as the name implies. And it felt, like, really close. If I had to get the less expensive tickets for whatever at the Garden, I would definitely choose that above the regular 300. So, John Cena, it was a very, like, modern WWE event. It felt like big time. The lines were like tremendous for the merchandise. I was kind of half thinking about, like, I don't like black t-shirts, but I saw that there were different colors. I was kind of half thinking about it, but then when the line was so long, I thought forget about it. Looked totally sold out. Interestingly, I assume there was like a meet and greet, like that sort of went into the main event, like the pre-Raw, because those seats that you get to take home were like empty. But then when the Raw actually started, it was full, of course, including some celebrities, one Giants player who made the Daily News segment. But I think it was just cool. It was special to see John Cena. I think like, whatever it takes, like if it's a three-way match, I think he was like very much, this was something that he wanted. I'm assuming Rey Mysterio and Sheamus are like his close friends. There was a lot of cool stuff like at the end with the setup for Survivor Series, which we talked about the War Games a lot last week. You schooled me on that. But to see, basically, I think it was sort of like just to see the celebrities more than the matches, because you don't often see Roman Reigns. And when they first brought back Brock Lesnar, I was kind of like, who's interested, like whatever. But that you can see, like when it's live, it is like, especially when he's not around so much, like it is something very special. I'm not so like worried about, people's ages, but it did feel like, you're looking at like who are the stars now. And some it took, right, like how many years did it take for Roman Reigns to like being pushed as a star to actually get there, which he did a number of years ago. But it felt like, you know, it's a pretty old group now. The thing that stuck with me in a funny way, John, was I wasn't familiar with CM Punk not like greasing his hair down. And it just looked like very poofy to me. I guess this is like his middle-aged man look. Probably the least, I'm not sure how many pre-matches there were at the Royal Rumble when I went at the Garden. Like if you count that as like one match and then whatever the total was. But like in terms of like a regular event, probably the least matches of any wrestling show I've ever been to. Right, 5 matches.
Yeah, that's what they usually do now, yeah.
Okay, so 5, and that's 5 is counting the main event show, but there was the Maxxine Dupri, like Becky Lynch thing, it didn't hit so well for me. I'm not sure if Maxxine Dupri, is she kind of green?
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay. Not a rookie, but close to it.
Okay. She definitely had something, and I'm just like about, you know, people that are watching me tweet could definitely let me know, but like it seemed like she was very green, but she definitely had something. And Becky Lynch has, you know, fully turned heel, whatever point that she did that. I was never like a Dolph Ziggler person. Like the last time I watched, he was there probably. So like he didn't feel really gone. The Cena thing was cool, I said, for what it was. But I think the far and away, and this is like classic way of making stars, the Gunther Javon Edwards match was great.
Yes, good stuff there. And the return of Gunther. He'd been out since SummerSlam. So the return of Gunther you saw at MSG. Overall, good show. Everyone was talking about how down they were on WWE and the ratings. And all of a sudden, the ratings the last few weeks shot back up. And then this show was good. And Lesnar, obviously, being a part of Survivor Series enhances the show. Roman Reigns being a part of Survivor Series enhances the show. Just a little bit of different energy, little different aura when those two guys are around.
Yeah, like you could see like why it's always leaning on stars, and that's why it's hard, you know, classically, right, to build up new ones because you have the stars. But Gunther really did a great job at Javon Edwards, and like there was a guy in my section.
Javon Evans.
Yeah. Who was like really into the match, and like both people. He's like when Javon would get like the offense in, like he'd be like, yeah, there you go. And then like when Gunther would get like a big move, he'd be like, oh, like, which, you know, you don't really like get that as much anymore. Yep. So it was fun just like to be caught up in the moment with him too.
I feel like sometimes that MSG crowd is great because they'll break the suspension of disbelief a little bit. I remember going to Punk versus Rollins in the cage match. They were like deathly against Rollins winning. They were really for Punk. And it was almost like they cared about who won and lost. It was very different than what we see nowadays where they're just kind of clapping for moves. So definitely a different, sometimes different audience at MSG. Very cool. Very old school sometimes.
Yeah. I felt like this audience was like star driven. Like, because usually at the Garden, no matter who it is, like, you know, whoever comes out, like, they'll get a pop first. Mm-hmm. But, like, when Rusev came out, people were just like, there was no reaction, really. So, like, you'd think people are just excited, like, to see the first match, but it is more of, like, a TV pacing, and obviously people were there for a certain purpose.
So sold out, over 18,000 people were in attendance there. Huge show. You liked it? Thumbs up? Are you going to be keeping up with WWE now?
Yeah, I definitely was happy that I went. I liked it. Probably not more than I usually do. I don't have Netflix or anything like that. I haven't watched a full Raw in many, many, many years. But definitely will keeping my eye on it. I get the, you know, intrigue is like, who will be John Cena's last opponent? I'm not sure if you have to do that in a tournament, just to focus on like who makes the most sense. Obviously, they know where they're going, you know, at the end. So that'll be something intriguing. But I think, and people talk about this for years, and again, I'm not in a rush to get rid of people based on their age. It's just exposure and so on. And there is less exposure now. So you are in a better position. But like, who's coming next, and are there the stars in NXT or people upcoming that can move it? Obviously, Gunther is young still, but like, who else? You know, and like the LA Knight, right, has been around forever, and you know, all the members of most of the members of the Bloodline have been around forever.
Yeah, forever. Yeah.
So you know, it'll be interesting to see, because like, where will you like pull other stars from? I guess you can always take from AEW, where you know, people that were with them before came back and so on, and you can have a little sign with Jericho, but a long retirement isn't necessarily like the answer for, you know, building the stars going forward. So curious to see what happens.
Speaking of AEW, are you going? The little birdie told me that you and your son might be going to AEW.
Yeah, so I'm curious. It's more like, of course, for myself, but I'm curious, like, with my son, like, you know, we went to, of course, the WWE Holiday Show last year, and he enjoyed it, but, you know, it's his first show, but, like, we were so far away, not in the mid section, that it felt like, you know, it was like, okay, yeah. But then we went to the indie show in Yonkers, and, like, he was, like, so into it, and it took him, like, 50 minutes to realize, like, you know, that you could yell at them, and like, if they throw candy into the crowd, you could throw it back or whatever. Like, and he loved that. So I'm curious, like, sort of like this middle ground where it's like, you have some stars, semi major league, I guess, depending on how you define it, but like good seats too. We're in row C. But I learned my lesson from last year. I mean, I should have known this with the Hammerstein, but especially the AEW setup, like you could be in the third row, but it could still feel like pretty far away from the ring. So I'm curious to see like how this will work out. This seats 1 and 2, so hopefully it's not so far out in section F. But like some of the rows are really long, and I think I was even in the front row last year, but it was like the line kept going, and like it wasn't around the ring, I guess, if that's the best way to put it.
Now, as far as TNA is concerned, I know you won't be going to any TNA shows anytime soon. What is going on with them? What's the latest? Are they going to be having a TV deal, or what's up with them?
Yeah, so suddenly this AMC news broke here, and as you see, John, I have a lot here, so may need your support to take a breath or take a drink as we go along. But from John Alba and SI, high-ranking television industry sources have indicated to The Takedown that there's an expectation that TNA will announce a new media rights deal by the end of 2025, if not sooner. Wrestling industry news that all options were on the table as far as its media rights were concerned, including a potential WWE-friendly network and whatever. So that's all old news. But Alba reports that another network with no current WWE ties has been pursuing TNA's rights, with them indicating that AMC has emerged as a potential landing spot. Among other AMC network assets are BBC, IFC, Sundance, and WeTV. So there's also a thing where people are talking about like MSG, MSG Network, like the Dolans and whatever. So like the Dolans are still like involved in all this, but there's a split. There's definitely one public stock, but there may even be two, where there's like the arena and all that, and then there's like the media rights assets. It's interesting. People like in the wrestling community were like being a little bit lazy in terms of reporting like what's their current like distribution and viewership or whatever. They're like, WrestleNomics reports in 2023 that it was this, like it doesn't have to be from a wrestling source. You can, you know, do some work, look it up, whatever it may be. But and we'll get this list in probably the next 3-4 weeks, probably before Christmas, probably a week before Christmas. IndieWire, and then Variety does it too, has like most viewed networks. So AMC, it's kind of quiet because they don't have like New Walking Dead or anything like that in quite a while. It's kind of becoming like one of those ghost networks that people talk about, where it's just like, you know, classic reruns or whatever. But just to put in perspective, so 32 last year in terms of most watched was FS1, 300,000. Paramount, 295. AMC, 291,000. Followed by Lifetime, A&E Networks, Newsmax, ESPN2, WeTV, and Reels. So in terms of a network, they're doing pretty well. So I asked Grok to compare some of the places that we've heard about, you know, in terms of landing spots for TNA. So that will include, of course, AMC, CW, A&E, and Peacock. So in terms of distribution, for AMC, 70 million cable households, 5-7% decline year over year. 120 million US TV households for the CW, 99% broadcast coverage via affiliates like Sinclair and Nexstar. So basically in every US home. A&E, 60 million homes. Peacock, 41 million paid US subs. Viewership, AMC, 160 to 215 total viewers. So it's interesting that they came up with that. Let's go back. 291 was reported last year by IndieWire. So we'll see with the new numbers. For CW, 392,000 total viewers. For A&E, 234 to 286. So that's interesting that they have that rating higher. Peacock, 1.6% of US TV share. So quite low. Of course, it's a different thing. Key demographics, AMC, 25 to 54 adults, 50-50 gender split. CW, 18 to 34. A&E, 35 plus. Peacock, 25 to 44. I asked them about the appeal for wrestling fans. AMC, low currently. So, of course, CW high because it has NXT, A&E medium because it has some WWE programming, and Peacock high or very high, obviously. Key highlights, distribution. CW's broadcast reach dwarfs cable and streaming, but actual tune-in is low without events. Peacock subs reflect streaming growth. Viewership trends, all linear outlets average under 500,000, highlighting cord cutting. Peacock excels in peaks. Demo overlap. Wrestling's 18 to 49 male core aligns best with CW and Peacock. A&E, older. AMC is neutral. Wrestling fit. Peacock and CW lead for live weekly access. A&E for archival appeal and so on. So that's really just, you know, what it is at the moment. So I asked them to do pros and cons for both AMC and for...
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Or TNA, you know, if they were to work together. So distribution. For AMC, it expands their linear footprint with a live weekly show, tapping into wrestling's event-driven loyalty to combat revenue declines. They could bundle it with AMC Plus, which has, according to them, 10.4 million subs for hybrid viewing. Cons for AMC. AMC's cable homes are shrinking, limiting long-term exposure, lack sports coverage, potential capping growth versus broadcast and streaming rivals. Pros for TNA, doubles U.S. household reach from Access TV, boosting visibility for pay-per-views and talent recruitment, aligns with TNA's post-pandemic expansion plans. Con, AMC's audience may not convert to wrestling fans, risking low tune-in. Deal could delay a bigger broadcast move. Viewership. So for the network attracts, they would attract wrestling's core demos, underserved on AMC. Live events could spike primetime average, but they have no wrestling history, which means it's an unproven draw. For TNA, they'd leverage AMC cinematic style for prestige, enhancing TNA's storytelling and drawing A&E WWE crossovers. WWE's influence prioritizes platforms with sports infrastructure for max leverage against AEW. AMC's lower ceiling could hinder TNA's autonomy if their partnership ends. Demographic and audience. For the network, bolsters balance 25 to 54 skew with wrestling's young male, appealing to advertisers in action and sports, but the core AMC viewers may reject sports entertainment as lowbrow. For TNA, exposes them to genre-savvy fans like horror and action, fostering crossover appeal. but it has a limited overlap with their older female-leaning demo, revenue, and strategic impact. Low cost for entry generates affiliate boost and ad revenue, positions AMC as wrestling player without WWE ties, but a financial discipline amid MSG restructuring may limit aggressive spending and cord cutting. For TNA, secure stable rights fees and revenue shares, funding more live events. On certain terms, could cap earnings if WWE deal sours. So let's now go into cord cutters, who said, by adding a weekly high engagement property like TNA, AMC could have a few hybrid options for viewers, a combination of linear broadcasts on AMC or other owned networks paired with next day or live streaming on AMC Plus could strengthen its revenue in the streaming bundle wars. Pairing AMC's rich with TNA Plus with bonus content, archives, or live alternate feeds. So, John, do you know anyone that has AMC Plus?
No, but it does look interesting. I almost was thinking about getting it, but never ended up getting it. But it does look like it has some good stuff on there.
Are you a Walking Dead fan?
I used to be. I kind of fell off with it, but I did watch it until the very end. So I have seen a lot of it.
How many seasons? Like, when was the last season?
It had to have been a couple of years ago now. But they had so many spinoff shows though since then. Okay, so they've had a bunch of spin-off shows that I think are on AMC Plus.
Okay, so that's that. And then, like, I guess you could take TNA Plus, right, and sort of, like, add it together. But I don't see that, like, the crossover would have to be, like, less than 5%, I would think. Like, it'd only be, like, taking whatever the TNA Plus subscribers are and, like, basically adding them to AMC Plus if there's not accounting for friction, which there would be, you know, converting people from one to another. Some people just let things renew, right, month to month. Yeah. They may not be too big to be small, but basically, like, they're too small to be big, right? Like, if you combine them, yeah. Like, what are they working towards, right? Because there's all these, like, mega, maybe, like, you roll that in and then you can roll it into something bigger, right? Media eats media. Now, the mysterious Blake Avignon acts on X and of Substack and all that, always has deep insight. AMC might be active in conversation with TNA. That part tracks. The other side is that AMC is operating under Dolan's broader posture, including the ongoing MSG Networks restructuring, the possible sale or merger, including Yes and Gotham Sports. Situations like that usually create discipline, not aggressive spending. There's also the WWE factor. Their partnership with TNA is built to serve WWE's interests. They want visibility, leverage, and a way to keep AEW boxed out. For that part to work, TNA needs a platform with sports infrastructure, crossover value, and reach. That points to CW or NBC Sports Network and Peacock, not AMC. AMC can make a deal work, but the ceiling is lower and it does not advance the strategic goals WWE has tied to its TNA partnership. With Disney exploring a sale for A&E TV, both networks look like stalking horses that help TNA close with their long-term partners, unless TNA decides autonomy and creative control matters more than ecosystem reach. John, how do you think this all plays out?
I don't know, because I heard, you know, through the grapevine, obviously John Alba reported, a bunch of other people reporting that, yeah, TNA is going to have a deal and they're going to end up here, they end up there, but that never kind of comes to fruition, and then we don't really know. So it's really, I have no clue. I'm hoping they end up somewhere. I just have no clue. And I don't know if AMC is kind of the right get, if you will, either for them.
I think the face-saving thing from TNA will be like, we were talking up so much because we had a deal with the CW. And if not for the Nielsen changes that hurt, NXT ratings, you know, it aligned so well with NXT, you know, TNA always popped the number when they came and the fans interjected. We were going to put them on Saturday nights or whatever it may be to, you know, to get started and grow from there. But once there was this new Nielsen system, we just realized the numbers didn't work, and that's why they didn't pick us up.
That's fair enough. Now, obviously, they've got some other shows coming up, right? I mean, they've got some big shows in kind of alignment with NXT, right? Because they're running Full Sail and different places that are kind of tied into NXT.
Yeah, so we don't, like, we covered last time how it was looking at Full Sail, like, prior. We don't have, like, how it worked out all three nights, but for a turning point, for sure, from WrestleTix, that was sold out, 626 seats, which, you know, you would hope so or expect that would be the case. Now, looking at El Paso, and like I mentioned last time, it's, you know, I don't want to say unfortunate timing because it's, you know, celebrating the life of Eddie Guerrero, and that could happen anytime. It's good that it gets out there in El Paso. It's unfortunate timing for TNA that, you know, it didn't align with them being in town, because that they could have played off that for, you know, marketing purposes and so on without sounding crass about that. For El Paso, the first night, 1,269 seats distributed. And then for the second night, 578. And the third night, 397. So obviously the first looking good, the rest weak. And then Genesis, we were talking about, like, is it going to be on the board? What are they announcing in January and so on? So now they have it on their website and it says stay tuned for more information. So waiting for that announcement, which had included Dallas, assuming that's going to be in Garland, Texas, like usual.
How about NXT? We're talking about NXT. What's going on with them? What's the latest with some NXT news?
Yeah, so going back to last weekend, which we talked about last time, and then ahead, and we could see that this is going to be a regular thing, maybe once a month where they do a triple shot weekend. If you have the talent already under contract and they're contracted to work a certain amount of dates, but you're just not giving it to them, or instead of pointing it to Florida, if going on the road like this, you know, makes sense by doing 1,200 to 2,000 people, and that's profitable, then, you know, they'll continue doing it. As we talked about with Brandon Thurston recently, like, he felt that they wouldn't be this ambitious if it wasn't a profit-making endeavor, that they wouldn't just do this for developmental purposes, which I think is important to do. So when they were in Green Bay on November 14th, they did just about 1,500 people in the Aragon Ballroom in Chicago. That was a sold-out setup of just over 1,000 tickets. A Gold Rush at MSG did fairly well, I think, for what it was, 2,949 tickets. I'm sure they would have wanted a sellout, but that was a lot to ask from the market. And now, next month, they're already doing a triple shot. So Macon City Auditorium in Macon, Georgia, WrestleTix has it as 1,513 seats on the map. On the 12th in Greensboro, at the Novant Field Health Field House at the Greensboro Complex. That seems like it was a wrestling venue. I didn't have a chance to see, like, what it used to be called without all the corporate names. So that's about a 2,500 seat setup. And this name we all know from WCW, you know, we're coming to the Township Auditorium in Columbia, South Carolina. So cool to see that name. December 13th. With 2,861 tickets on the map.
Man, feels like South Carolina, for some reason, is becoming maybe a bit of a wrestling hotbed. NXT is going to be running there a bunch. MLW running there. I know AEW runs. I mean, everybody seems to run it, but now it's like kind of the home base of MLW. Tell us about MLW and more about this move to South Carolina.
Yeah, John, I wrote this tweet on X, but I deleted it like three times because I didn't want to like look for trouble. But we don't usually find trouble too much on the podcast once in a while. But my joke was going to be, did they move the P.O. box from Amerenek to Charleston? Because I don't think there was an office, as far as I'm aware, in Amerenek, New York, to speak of. It was a P.O. box near Cork Bauer's home. I don't think there would be like, Mr. St. Laurent, you know, coming in with the suit and tie to a work desk in Mamaroneck every day. So
hey, you never know.
Yeah, never know. Maybe the P.O. box is just to keep the crazies away. I'd assume, you know, like if even if you're going to have freelancers and you don't want to like have everything be digital and get together with people, I'd assume it would just be cheaper to do so in South Carolina rather than in New York. You know, for the setup, the Charleston Music Hall potentially has 959 seats on the map. Maybe they use like some of the upper tiers for cameras or something like that. But it was fully sold out, 607 tickets, according to WrestleTix, prior to the show. Now, John, I did something I rarely do. I watched a fair amount of this show, kind of like fast-forwarding and looking and so on. It was, you know, for what it was watchable. There's just so much like wrestling competition on. However, kind of reminded me also when they had that like shot on Vice, like the production was quite poor. The lighting was bad. The audio was off. I don't know if they usually use music that's rights protected, so they didn't want it coming across on YouTube. I'd have to check like other episodes if that's an issue, or maybe that's handled like in post-production. I think the first like promo, like the first like tape segment, I'm not sure if it was for, you know, an opening to the show or if it was like for the liquor, like there was no audio, that sort of thing. But you know, it was a fun show in terms of like integrating the CMLL talent in a big way, having Arn Anderson there, you know, seeing Killer Cross. Yeah, it was just a fun watch. Did you catch any clips or anything like that?
I did see. I saw some of the Andersons. I saw Killer Cross and Matt Riddle. I saw a little bit of it. It looked interesting. I kind of like the vibe of the place. I kind of like the vibe of the crowd. I like the obviously, I love the Andersons, obviously, and Killer Cross and Riddle. But it just, I don't know, it came off kind of cool to me that it seemed like, from the clips I saw, the crowd was going nuts. So it kind of seemed interesting.
Yeah, they seemed excited about it. But like it was, you know, if the venue was full, it was dark and so on. So I think it was more of a positive than a negative. I don't want to be like a comic book guy and be like, worst show ever. It was fine. But like, I think there's still issues that they're managing. I know that, you know, every once in a while they'd be announcing like a turnover in who's producing it a couple times very visibly and so on. So like, if you're working with a different team, potentially, I have no idea, or like freelancers from South Carolina, you know, whatever, that aren't as familiar with it, then you'd be managing those issues. But they got a lot of local coverage in the Post and Courier, actually, which is, I think, in that region, also covered them as well. The famous Mike Mooneyham wrote them up. So just talk about some of those snippets. Let's see, has announced it's moving its headquarters to Charleston. Court Bowers, high-profile wrestlers, former UFC fighters, top international talent, and the heirs to legendary wrestling families, all delivered with an authentic combat sports presentation that serves perfectly between MMA and wrestling. Charleston isn't just hosting MLW anymore, it's home. I'm thrilled to officially announce that MLW is moving its league headquarters to Charleston, South Carolina. Bauer recognized the advantages of moving to Low Country. Charleston has real wrestling lineage and also is one of the strongest, healthiest business sectors in the country right now. The city is booming. Tech, hospitality, entertainment, everything is on the rise. That kind of ecosystem is exactly what MLW wants to be a part of. Combine that with Charleston's connection to Crockett, WCW, and decades of Southern wrestling, and the decision becomes obvious. This is a city with heritage and momentum, and that's a rare combination. Charleston was an easy choice for us. The South is where the soul of wrestling lives. It's where the sport hit hardest, where gold and glory mattered, where wrestling was a combat sport before anyone used that term. Charleston has that rare mix of old school quality, creativity, and grit that perfectly mirrors what MLW stands for. This city takes wrestling seriously. It's part of the culture here, part of the rhythm of the South, and it deserves a league that it calls home. We're not just setting up an office, we're planting roots. Charleston will be our hub, our production base and the launchpad for everything we do going forward. As the MLW charts its path forward, the destination was always the South. Each territory used to have its own feel. Memphis didn't feel like Detroit, just like Jim Crockett didn't feel like WWF. We wanted to bring that sense of identity back to the sport. Charleston is known for its creativity and hospitality. That makes it soul, swagger, and excellence. Okay, I think we got the point. I think it's a smart idea. And let's see how they're able to build this up some more.
Excellent stuff there with MLW. What's going on with GCW? They've got some big shows coming up.
Yeah, so as we talked about, is GCW a deathmatch promotion anymore? Is it not? Well, sometimes it is and sometimes it's not, but they often lean back on that for some of their strongest big business. So January 3rd in the legendary Berwyn Eagles Club, that show quickly sold out what they term one night only for a deathmatch tournament. As we're recording this, the following day, they'll be at the American Dreams Mall, and looks like they'll be at least five rows deep in terms of tickets sold. More probably by, of course, Showtime. Looks like it's potentially down a little bit from the first show, which you often see, happen. But it looks very strong. December 5th in Washington Hall defies location. There are still front row tickets available. In LA on December 6th, a couple second row tickets available, and then a few fourth row and then fifth row and beyond NGA available. Nick Gage Invitational still has ringside tickets available. And then in New Jersey for New Year's Eve, and I just wanted to correct something that we are kind of figuring out last time. So they were at the Mecca last year as well. They haven't run Atlantic City on New Year's and New Year's Day for a couple of years. So that was more recently announced, but plenty of tickets remaining in the front row and beyond. And then looking beyond January 3rd, in terms of shows announced thus far from January to March, Dallas at Gillies, January 18th, in Wichita at The Wave, January 31st at Harris, Philadelphia. February 1st is, I believe, the show that they're doing that we'll talk about later. That's a co-promotion at Melrose Ballroom. February 6th and 7th at White Eagle Hall. February 14th back to LA. 15th, Mesa, Arizona. March 6th to be announced. March 7th in Columbus. And March 8th in Chicago.
So as far as House of Glory is concerned, little HOG, what's going on with them? It seems like a bit of a hot streak. They've got some sellouts coming up, and obviously Amazing Red, a big part of the show, Mercedes Moné, and maybe even a little Killer Cross mixed in.
Yes, so let me see here. So, sorry, John, can you repeat that one time?
House of Glory, what's going on with House of Glory?
House of Glory. So, some momentum going on here. Of course, the Mercedes Moné show in Long Island at the Suffolk Credit Union Arena sold out. That was in conjunction with the big event. They are going to ride that momentum, but without a big event, I assume, on March 21st, 2026, and returning to Long Island in some capacity. And then sold out as well in Chicago. And that is November 21st. So actually that's today as we talk about it. So I looks like some momentum. I don't know if I'd say necessarily a breakout year yet. I think we want to see, well, the year is ending as well, to see how they will do. Do they have anything else on the board for they do have a couple of shows in New York on the board, at least one show under their own branding. Back in their regular New York venues, and then they're in LA, and then back to Long Island, like we talked about. So certainly a staple of the New York scene, one of the most visible promotions. And then when they do these here and there shows in Chicago and Texas and Philadelphia, they seem to do well. So, like, you know, in terms of the independent wrestling business that's struggling, they seem to be bucking that trend. And maybe that's, you know, what will come out of all this, that, you know, the strongest promotions will survive, whereas the others will not.
As far as here and there, what's going on? You posted something about the woman's top 250 and who's owning PWI. What's going on with here and there?
Yeah, so in the PWI Women's 250 issue, which is, I think, considered like the winter issue or the New Year's issue, depending on how it's written on the cover, you know, whenever you mail a magazine, you're required to put in, like, statistics once a year, how many copies that you printed, how many were sold, and so on. And the numbers in the past have been, in the last few years, have been around 11 to 13 or 14,000. And this year as well, 12,107 of the issue that they examined in terms of what were sold. So this says now that includes electronic copies. So in the past, I don't think it did. I'll have to double check. But I think it's stability. So for those that worry about magazines, they've kind of been at this level for a while. And, you know, there's certain people that want to hold magazines, or I get it in the mail. I'm not sure if I'm going to resubscribe because I don't flip through it that much. But the lists are always fun to look at. So I think there's some stability there in terms of pro wrestling magazines. What else? Coastal Championship Wrestling is working with Championship Wrestling, best known as Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. They, Dave Marquez has a you know, a wonderful relationship with Gray Media across the country, especially in southeastern U.S. And I guess there's a desire for more pro wrestling on that network, so they're working with them there. So that's good to see, not only for another promotion getting on television, but the overall strength of Dave Marquez's empire. Tacoma Weekly, it's always fun to see, like, something that says, like, returns to a new venue after many years. So pro wrestling returns to the Tacoma Armory after nearly 60 years. Let's see. Promoter Diafula Dobashi said Grit City Championship Wrestling is bringing live wrestling back to the Tacoma Armory. After nearly 60 years, wrestling is returning on November 22nd. With Grit City Championship Wrestling, First Circle will be performing under the same rafters that once hosted legends like Luther Lindsay, Dean Ho, and King Curtis Iokea. The event will feature an old-school five-match card, including two championship bouts to crown the first ever Grit City Men's Champion and Grit City Women's Champion. So the rest is more locally centric. And that might be a smart way for wrestling to go. Also, like, it gets expensive, especially if you're flying people in, or even if you're paying them at all. If they're local, like, to have cards that, you know, have to be 5 hours long and have 27 matches or whatever. I think we've calmed down from that from the early 2000s. But you can try something like five matches. Five matches feels like a little bit light because sometimes people like the variety and don't want to see every match going, you know, more than 20 minutes or something like that. But it sounds like a worthy experiment. Our friends at Arrival Wrestling are having a good show sales in terms of New Jersey that they're doing with Revolver as well. So that is sold out, or nearly sold out, in terms of reserve seats. So in terms of the February 1st GCW show that we referred to, but it's really an Orange Crush show. Branding that really brings, like, art and culture into wrestling. So they're going to have the show at the Melrose Ballroom, teaming up with GCW, Jersey Championship Wrestling, which they have owned with Game Changer Wrestling, and Little Oak Center for Neurodevelopment, Super Power Slam. So sounds like a worthy cause and something that's already gotten a good deal of publicity. The Trenton update for New Japan, plus 35 tickets since the last show. taking place on February 27th, 832 tickets distributed. Finally, end-to-end, Russo to Russo. So Detroit News had this. I also got the press release about it. But this is an interview with Violent J, who recently partnered with Vince Russo, as we know, writing Lunacy episodes. J credits Russo with a surge of interest in the promotion. When preparing to launch Lunacy, Jay studied the operations of various indie wrestling promotions, including MLW, GCW, and NWA. He then decided to broaden JCW's scope from what it had been targeting to appeal to a wider fan base. I want a product that isn't just for juggalos, but it's for all wrestling fans. But we're juggalos that are doing it. You know what I mean? I wanted to show the world how good of a show juggalos can put on. He says running a weekly TV show is way more than just scripting suplexes and body slams. It's about drama. It's about humor. It's about storylines. It's so much more than just the matches. I'm really enjoying this. Pardon me. Shit, man. This is all in support of a show that they're running for free in Detroit. And they're going to give out 500 turkeys afterwards. So very generous to the community. So finally, I asked Grok to run a comparison between when Juggalo was working with GCW on the feud and since the Russo announcement. Engagement metrics show the feud drove steady community-focused buzz, event-specific spikes, while Russo's reveal created viral explosive growth. Data pulled from X Post, semantic keyword searches for Juggalo-related terms, and YouTube views for JCW Lunacy. Feud era posts averaged 500 to 2,000 likes. Russo posts hit 1,000 to 20,000 likes. So X Post analysis, GCW, feud 50 relevant, post Russo 40 relevant. Average likes per post, GCW 150 to 800, Russo 200 to 4,000. Average repost, 20 to 100 for GCW. For Russo, 50 to 300. Top engagement, ICW's feud highlight videos, 99 likes, 22 reposts, 3,000 views. Cultaholics Russo reveal, 409 likes, 34 reposts, 286,000 views. YouTube views, pre-Russo, 10 to 15K per episode. Post-Russo, 15K in 48 hours. Episode 2, 20K in 48 hours. Trends, hashtag spikes around events for GCW, for Russo, broader reach, 50% increase in watch time, with calls for Russo swerve memes. Key takeaways. It solidified JCW as a juggalo fortress with engagement tied to live events and invasions. Views emphasize community over polish, driving attendance records but plateauing online. Russo's boost, higher viral potential, pulling casual fans. Juggalos see it as JCW leveling up post-feud, with early metrics showing 30 to 50% engagement update. Future outlook. The feud closed JCW's underdog chapter. Russo opens a storyline heavy one. If payoff delivers, Lunacy episode teases bombshells. Expect sustained growth. So I think, John, like, the question is this best for business, right? Because whenever you say Vince Russo, and Jim Cornette knows this very well, like, whenever you talk about him, you're going to get a lot of engagement. But, you know, are they fans? Are they there to stand around? I mean, part of the way juggalos make money is YouTube. So if people are going to YouTube to watch or hate watch it or whatever, but like, will they come to the show? Will be people be turned off or whatever? But thus far, it's showing strong positive returns.
Yeah, that's the one thing people are saying. Oh, is there interest? There seems to be interest there because it's been up the channel, if you will. Like you said, 30% up, whatever it was. The views have been up, the view count. So people are interested, whether they're hating it or loving it or just intrigued by it. They're getting some views thanks to the new quote-unquote investor, Vince Russo, to JCW.
Oh, yes, and I forgot the investor status. So that'll be interesting as that comes out more, what that really means. But I didn't know if we'd be able to cover this all in an hour, John, but we did it. And one thing that I realized with episode 260, it's kind of sort of our the end of 5 years. I know that there's been special episodes and there's leap years and whatever, but basically 52 times five.
Pretty crazy, Avi, when you think about it. Man, that went by fast, did it not? That's nuts.
It really did. Great working with you.
Yes, you
continue
too.
That. And we've done it mostly, well, depending on the season, mostly late night or, you know, lunchtime on Fridays afternoons, but sometimes early mornings and whenever to make it work, depending on if our guest was in China, Australia, the UK, or anything like that.
Man, we've been everywhere too. Japan, right? We had a couple, South Korea. I mean, we were all over the place with some of the guests on the show. Pretty nuts, pretty wild if you look at it.
Yeah, I think once in the early days, it just happened that invited some guests, and one person was available late night on Saturday, and with the time difference, the next person was available early Sunday. So, like, that was probably the closest we taped. I think there was less than like a 12-hour difference between those episodes.
Pretty crazy when you actually go back and look at it. And pretty crazy how fast time flies. It goes by very, very fast here, Lovey. That's crazy.
Yeah, I was going to say when I started the show, I had hair, but that wasn't true. I'm kind of the same.
Same here. So let's wrap this bad boy up and let's head towards the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @2manpowertrip. Have you, Lovey?
Follow me on X at LoveyMarg, LaveMarg. Check out my long-form articles on LionCubJobSearch.com. Check out my book on Amazon, Trump Mania, Vince McMahon, WWE, and the Making of America's 45th President. There's also a 2020 edition. You can go back and listen to our podcasts, the Trump Mania, as that unfolded, which led in to this podcast. And of course, join our LinkedIn group, The Business of the Business.
All right. Thank you, Lavi. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. See you right back here next week for a little Business of the Business. We'll see you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPT Empire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother. Three, two, one. Happy New Year from our friends over at Manscaped. The ball has officially dropped, but that doesn't mean you have to drop the ball on your balls in 2023. Whether you had a New Year's kiss or not, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming have you covered for your much-needed resolution of bringing sexy back. Join the 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. With our exclusive offer, go to manscaped.com and use the promo code BIZ, B-I-Z, for 20% off and free shipping. Let us have a toast for a new year, new you, and a new you with no pubes. If you really want to make 2023 the year to remember, make sure to try out Manscaped's wet goods as well. This includes the ultra premium body wash, 2-in-1 shampoo, and body deodorant. These products are absolute perfect for follow-up after your New Year's gym sessions. Cheers to new balls in 2023. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code BIZ at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the promo code BIZ, B-I-Z. Time to feel sexy and free this 2023 with Manscaped. Well, winners are getting paid. Now that backlash is in the books, now it's time to regroup before that storm hits. Just like the WWE, the real setup is already in motion. From every promo, every face-off, every backstage stare-down on Raw and SmackDown, it is all building towards one thing: Money in the Bank. If you know anything about Money in the Bank, you know chaos is coming, surprise cash-ins, career-defining moments, wild upsets. It's one of the most unpredictable cards of the year, and if you're ready, it can be one of the most profitable, too. Even if you've never bet on WWE before, this is your window. Keep one eye on WWE and keep the other on MyBookie. When the lines go live, they won't sit still for long. Lock in right now. Go to MyBookie. Use the promo code CONTROL, CONTROL, and boost your bankroll. Deposit $50, get an extra $25. Go bigger with $100, and MyBookie throws in $50. That's right. Use the promo code CONTROL, boost that bankroll, deposit $50, get an extra $25, or go bigger, deposit $100, and MyBookie will throw in an extra $50. Bet smart, stay ready, and cash in when it counts, only at MyBookie.